Morning, everyone. I just want to begin by expressing my gratitude to my root teacher, Roshi Diane Martin, in Illinois, and my California root teacher, Reverend Val Szymanski, and to Reverend Jim Hare, and to my gratitude to each of you, because without all of you, I wouldn't be here in this moment. And I'm grateful to be here, and it's wonderful that we're all sitting together in this beautiful, beautiful day. And speaking of a beautiful day, I know we all live in California, and yesterday it was 84 degrees, but I go outside and it seems as if birthings are boundless. Birthings are everywhere. Tulips blossoming, daffodils, lilacs, forsythia, even new red leaves on old green leaf branches, flowers that will turn into the fruits for us to eat in the summer. It appears almost as if birthings are unstoppable. I was thinking of a mentor of mine from many years ago now, and I was visiting her when she was quite ill, and I noticed on a shelf she had this sort of weird, I don't know what to call it even, sort of like a sculpture, sort of like a fossil. It was all like solidified sand, and there was a formation of a flower. And I commented to her about it, and she said, "Oh, I found that in a desert, and I brought it home because I realized that even in a desert, flowers grow." So it sort of seems as if birthings are unstoppable. And yet I think maybe the deeper truth is to say under certain conditions, birthing is unstoppable. I mean, because if we go to an urban area of poverty, that's where all the corporations bring their toxic waste. And maybe we wouldn't see flowers blooming everywhere. On the other hand, I just read an environmental report where scientists were looking at the impact of the coronavirus on the environment and, noticing the difference when there's less cars driving, there's no cruise ships going, there's less planes flying overhead. Most national parks have been closed down to human tourism. And what they discovered is that even the species that they had already decided were becoming extinct were coming back to life. It's almost like birthings are unstoppable under certain conditions. And looking at what humans are actually contributing to the environment that interferes with this natural birthing process. And I was also remembering when Reb Anderson was here for our session a couple of years ago, and it turned out that the jet air show was occurring right during the session. And these jets, of course, are, jets used in war, in bombings, and they were breaking the sound barrier and making noise. And at one point, Reb Anderson paused and he said, "I don't hear the air show anymore." And then he says, "Look, the leaves are fluttering outside. The air show continues." So even in very difficult situations, conditions can arise where birthings are unstoppable. And there are even special conditions for birthing. And you may know that there are certain lodgepole pines, eucalyptus and banksia trees that have serotinous cones or fruits. I've just learned about this, that are completely sealed with resin. And so these seeds can lay buried in the earth, for decades. And it's only when there's a fire that burns the resin do these seeds begin to grow. So sometimes even for us, it takes a crisis, it takes a conflagration for something in us to break open, to develop into more of who we can be. seeds of life can be buried within us for a long time if we already decide it's too late or it's not possible. So under the right conditions, birthing is unstoppable. And our practice invites us to be that open. When we pause, when we let go, not hold on to fixed views, we're open to something new birthing. Each new moment offers a new possibility, a new creation. As Reb Anderson says, the Buddha activity is always already happening. But we also can't just talk about birth. There is a mystery of birth and death. In a short discourse by Dogen in the Ehe Korku, it's called Serene Illumination Beyond Distinctions. And he says, sitting on our cushions, we can give birth to immeasurable Buddhas, a birth which is exactly no birth. And Suzuki Roshi says, to take care of the exhalation is very important. To die is more important than trying to live. When we always try to be alive, we have trouble. Rather than trying to be alive or active, if we can be calm and die or fade away into emptiness, then naturally everything will be all right. So even in childbirth, there is the mystery of life and death, because as the baby comes into the world, is born, the umbilical cord is cut. Something dies that was going on before to sustain life. So this is the mystery of life and death itself. Trying to stay alive. We don't need that because birthing is a natural process that we don't want to interfere with. But today, I want to especially consider human birth. What is so significant about our human birth? And to begin that conversation, Jim's going to put on the screen a calligraphy work by a contemporary calligrapher, Yamamoto Genpo. And Jim, I'll wait for a moment. Yamamoto Genpo lived from 1866 to 1961, and he is a renowned Japanese calligrapher and follower of Hakuin. He had no formal education. He was legally blind, and it was only later in life that he learned to read and write. At age 25, he became ordained as a monk and later restored Hakuin's temple, Ryutakuji, in Mishima. So he had a hard life. He was abandoned at birth by his mother and adopted by an abusive father. His mother died when he was 12. And at first he had a life of addiction, but he went on pilgrimage and decided to be a monk. And while abbot of Hakuin's temple, he rejoiced in the birth of a child to one of his parishioner families and created this image of a child and called this portrayal, wishing the child longevity and radiance. So before I say more, I just want to invite, I can't see everybody, but if you let this image impact you as you look at it and notice what arises, and maybe just speak a word or a phrase just spontaneously by unmuting yourself, what comes to you as you look at this image of a baby just born?
Sweetness. Awakening.
Love.
Smiles.
Round. New beginnings.
Serenity.
Joy. Rocking.
Mm.
Warmth.
Innocence. Mm.
Lovely, yes. So rich, all of what gets evoked. And I wish I could actually interpret the actual written calligraphy around this image. I tried a little bit to look into it, but what's interesting still is that Genpo is a contemporary calligrapher, so it looks like he learned all the different calligraphy scripts, or not all, but many. And so there's lots of different sort of expressions around this image of this infant. And if you look really closely down at the bottom, there's a very tiny image, which I think is a Buddha sitting in the lotus position. So this wonderful image, you know, of the baby wishing the child longevity and radiance, you know, we're all born like this. And there's a koan, and in the Blue Cliff record, number 80, and it's Chow Chu's newborn baby. This is the koan. A monk asked Chow Chu, "Does a newborn baby also have the sixth consciousness?" Chow Chu said, "Like tossing a ball on swift flowing water." The monk also asked Chow Chu, "What is the meaning of tossing a ball on swift flowing water?" Chow Chu said, "Moment to moment, nonstop flow. Like tossing a ball on a swift flowing water. Moment to moment, nonstop flow." We're born with original enlightenment. We're born already spiritually whole, not limited by any form. And this question about the sixth consciousness, there's lots I don't know about this, but this means the five senses and mind consciousness. So there's seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and then thinking. But I think what this koan is trying to offer us is that when we're born as human beings, all of the consciousnesses are here available to us, but before discrimination, before distinction. And so there's a kind of whole, total response to the moment without all of those kind of demarcations or categories entering in and sort of becoming a sort of a shield between you and everything else. And I, my youngest grandchild is only 1 year old. And it's amazing because he's like this. Like, you can hold him, and as soon as a person comes into his sort of field of awareness, he smiles and he goes, it's just this beautiful, you can feel him just so happy, you know, to encounter the world. And he waves. There's a friendly kind of care. So one commentator says, though a newborn baby is equipped with the six consciousnesses, though its eyes can see and its ears can hear, it doesn't discriminate among the six sense objects. At this time, it knows nothing of good and evil, superior and inferior, right and wrong, gain and loss. A student of the way must become again like an infant. Then one cannot be moved by praise or blame, success or fame, trial or ease. Baby is already complete at birth. Kishiawa Roshi says, we must have a mind like an infant. And if we lose it, we cannot be Buddha. So if you remember in the Jewelmere Samadhi, there's a certain point where we chant, like a babe in five aspects complete. It does not go or come. nor rise nor stand. Baba Waba, is there anything said or not? Ultimately, it does not apprehend anything, as its speech is not yet correct. Another commentator says, we can be like an infant in the world, complete with all the characteristics of a Buddha. Baba Waba, is there anything said or not? We're free to sort of detach from needing to discriminate everything or make all these distinctions, because our full experience of birthing into life, you know, can't be captured in words or speech. This is what Dongshan talks about when he says, we practice suchness. So there's another, Ya Wu is another commentator on this koan. And he, I guess, maybe invented, I don't know, but he has decided that there's such a thing as baby practice. He says, haven't you ever seen a newborn baby? Has a baby ever said, I know how to read the scriptures? At that time, it does not know the meaning of having the Buddha nature or not having the Buddha nature. He goes on to say, among the 16 contemplative practices, the baby's practice is best. When it's babbling, it symbolizes the student of the way, detached from the discriminating mind that grasps and rejects. That's why I praise infants. So the adept, all of us who are practicing, we can practice without artifice, without clinging to thoughts. The baby is like the sun and moon moving through the sky without ever stopping, without saying, I have so many names and forms. The baby is like the sky everywhere covering, like the earth everywhere supporting, since they have no mind. They bring up and nurture myriad beings without saying, I have so many accomplishments. Since sky and earth are mindless, they last forever. What has mind has limits. A person who has attained the path is like this too. In the midst of no activity, we carry on all activities, accepting all circumstances and meeting each circumstance with our compassionate heart. So I've talked about birthing as unstoppable under the right conditions. Yet we must embrace the mystery of life and death. And there's something special about our human birth, because we're born with original enlightenment, with spiritual wholeness. To me, this is amazing. And I want to sort of take another step and offer the possibility that our human birth is really a miracle. And the gift of our practice is also a miracle. So Dogen speaks so well in this territory, and another discourse in the Ehe Korku, he talks about this miraculousness of our practice. He says, with a monk's bowl with a handle and a monk's robe with horns, a monk's staff, looms, and bears fruit, a sitting cushion spreads out roots that grow sprouts. I'll say that again. With a monk's bowl with a handle and a monk's robe with horns, a monk's staff looms and bears fruit. A sitting cushion spreads out roots that grow sprouts. Dogen says, a monk's bowl with a handle and a monk's robe with horns are impossible items. But from such inconceivability bears fruit, as symbolized by a staff blossoming on a sitting cushion spreading out roots. So I feel like Dogen's saying, we bring our utter humanness, all of our limitations, all of our delusions. We sit with horns on our robe. And yet, as inconceivable as it sounds, life, births, awakening is given to us as a gift. So out of nothing, myriad Buddhas blossom moment to moment. The monk asked Tao Tu, what is the meaning of tossing a ball on swift flowing water? Tao Tu said, moment to moment, ongoing flow, nonstop birthing miracle. Thank you. I think we have a little time if any of you want to express something at this time. Kenny?
Oh, you're talking about children or babies not discriminating. I know when my one son was really almost like only a few months old, there was a squirrel outside the window. You know, I had propped him up on the couch and he was looking at it, but he wasn't going to react. It was just kind of odd, but I just remember that he was taking in the world, but he wasn't really discriminating about things out there.
Yeah, wow. You could really feel the difference. Thank you. Oh, Karen.
I think Linda was first, actually.
I think you were first, Karen. You just didn't put your hand up right away.
I thank you very much, Doralee, for that wonderful talk. It was making me think of two things, actually. One of them is that this morning I woke up with singing this song that I learned a couple of months ago when I took a Zen and art workshop. Anyway, it goes, river is flowing, flowing and growing, river is flowing out from the, out to the sea. Anyway, it was so kind of coincidental that I woke up singing this song this morning when I hadn't thought of it for months. And then you mentioned the river.
Wow. Well, that's so beautiful. Go ahead.
I just want to say one other thing is that Picasso supposedly said that he strived to be paint like a child again, that would be the most sincere maybe and free way to make art.
Wow. Thank you. I didn't know Picasso said that. Makes sense though. Yeah, especially now. Linda.
Doralee, maybe, people should put their screens on speaker view, and then Doralee should speak. And notice the painting behind her, who's of a nursing mother. I had never had a monitor big enough to really appreciate that painting. So it's kind of a coincidence, I think, that it's there today. Hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that painting?
Oh, not very much, except that my mother-in-law, my husband's mother, who also was an artist, she was a sculptress. And this was a painting that she loved, and it hung in her apartment, you know, all the time that I knew her and our children were growing up. And it's just a very special painting that is so archetypal of, you know, the child and the mother and the way that we're made to really care for each other unconditionally. That's what life is about. Thanks,
when I was at Green Gulch, I'm blanking on her name right now, but I know that you and Jim know her, and she's actually spoken here. Her first daughter was born when I was there, or had been born shortly before that. And she was carrying the baby in the dining hall one day, and she was talking to other people, and the baby was looking around, and I was looking at the baby, and there was this it wasn't a baby. I'm going to say probably around one. We were just focused on each other, and I swear that was one of the first time, like the baby was just beginning to experience the fact that there were other people, you know, because initially everyone they look at is like you described in your talk, it's kind of all one, but then there's a point where the baby starts discriminating. And I think I caught the baby at that time where she was just kind of learning, oh, because she just had this expression like, oh. Wow. So they're pretty amazing, that's for sure.
And you know, that's a sort of point too, because my teacher talks a lot about we can notice our consciousness right before we discriminate. So we really can, you know, be in that space now, but it calls upon us to, you know, have our attention ready for that. So thank you, Linda. So I know your hand's still raised, Karen, but okay. Anyone else have something to offer? Question? Oh, Barry.
Hi. So I'd already been practicing prior to having kids. And so like when I had my two kids, you know, I was definitely paying attention to like consciousness development. You know, it was like, like in a lot of ways, it almost felt like I was like a scientist, you know, watching them develop. And, you know, I mean, right away after being born, there was definitely things that they didn't like and things they liked. You know, they didn't like being cold. They didn't like being hungry. You know, they didn't like, sometimes they just wanted to be held, you know. And, you know, and so there was definitely like negative and positive emotions. But since like the self wasn't there yet, you know, the switch from emotion to emotion was seamless and instantaneous, you know, like from utterly despair to happiness would just be an instant switch, you know. And then when they got old enough to be something, to be someone, you could tell that switch was slower and slower, you know, where they weren't just upset anymore. They were upset for being upset. You know, it's like the second arrow thing in Buddhism. You know, the first arrow is the pain, and then the second arrow is the suffering, you know, the suffering from the pain. And it was just interesting, you know, watching their cognition develop from a Buddhist perspective and how it was just pain or discomfort, but then once their self turned on, how that became suffering and how they would hold on to it longer. They were upset that they were upset, which made it a lot worse. And it was just really interesting to watch that unfold.
Wow. To be able to witness that, you know, unfolding just like, you know, the Buddha says, you know, it's amazing. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And the suffering comes with the second arrow, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That is the second arrow.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Thank you so much. Malia.
Oh, I just wanted to say, your phrase, birthings are unstoppable, is so striking. And I just keep imagining it as like a title of a book of essays. And the really interesting essays that could comprise a book like that. So thank you.
Hey, let's write the book. Simone?
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to say a lot of this non-discrimination that we're talking about in babies, I think we can always find in other species, other animals like cats, dogs, horses. They have this kind of innocence and non-discrimination that we're talking about. And sometimes you can look at cats as like little Buddhas and such. So, and they're always present, a lot of these other species. So just something we can find elsewhere.
That's a wonderful expansion. Yes, all beings have this capacity, but maybe animals haven't lost it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you. Hey, Lauren, Joshua.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I really liked that you opened your talk about how birthing is all around us right now. And I think it's especially kind of meaningful or calming or soothing that we're having Mackenzie in the spring when we are seeing so much life blooming around us. And as I was listening to your talk, I was really contemplative on the fact that when we had Gwen, because it was our first, I was so anxious and I went into it with so much tension and fear of the unknown. And this time around, I feel so calm and at ease and going into it just when you talked about the flowing water, that's sort of how I feel, just kind of taking it as it comes. And so listening to your talk really just amplified that essence for me. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And we will be offering blessings on this new birth and for you to discover the calmness and the faith really and the unstoppable birthing. It's what a gift.